Hello everyone, and welcome to another Windows 7 session here at Channel 9. With me today, Reid, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Reid Townsend. I'm a program manager in Windows working on touch and multi-touch.
And my name is Yochai Kiradi. I'm the Windows 7 technical evangelist. And today we're going to talk about Windows Touch platform in Windows 7. So Reid, what's the Windows Touch platform in Windows 7? What does it do? What does it enable? And then we can dive into a little bit of the technical detail on some developer stuff.
The Touch platform is what's available to developers to build touch-aware applications. We support two main scenarios. The first is really adding touch to an existing application. You know, if you're Word or IE or something like that, you know, you're an application that has a lot of history, a lot of features, and you want to add some touch support in places that make sense. That's one scenario. The other is you're building some sort of experience that's touch optimized, something that's built for touch from the ground up. Maybe you've got, you know, a map experience or a photo editor where you can move photos around and work with multiple photos at a time. Something like that is a good example of a touch, you know, optimized experience, something that's built from the ground up for touch. Supporting these two scenarios, we really have a good, better, best model. On one hand, there's good. This is what the OS gives you for free. These are things like support for panning in pannable areas where we recognize certain types of scroll bars and things like that. You also get support for zoom. We map zoom to something like a control scroll wheel for legacy apps, things that haven't done any touch work. And so we can provide some level of support for the multi-touch features for legacy apps.
So that's out of the box, right? So out of box experience for, you mentioned Word, and because there are other application there already exist. Mm-hmm. They're not optimized, they're not even aware of it's touch enabled, right? So mm-hmm. we are doing something for that. We are under the hood, we're doing something.
Yeah. I mean if I was a small ISV and I had written, you know, my own application, I hadn't done any work for touch, if I plop that down on Windows 7 and sit down at a multi-touch machine, I could do things like two-finger panning or single-finger panning. And, you know, with some small caveats, you know, assuming I haven't done something really crazy with my scroll bars, like built a custom control or something out there, you know, if it was, you know, a common control, maybe on a C scroll bar or something like that, or if it was a WinForms app, there's a class of scroll bars that we can recognize and we can provide panning support in your application. Similarly, if you have zoom functionality or something mapped up to control scroll wheel, you would see control scroll wheel messages when the user does like a two-finger pinch gesture for zoom over your window.
Cool. So, So Windows 7 comes with a couple of standard apps, right? Like Photo Gallery mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yeah, Photo Gallery is in Windows Live, but there's an Inbox Photo Viewer.
Right. So, the Inbox Photo Viewer would have that support.
Yeah, Photo Viewer, this is a good example of what we would say is in the better bucket. So, good's what you get for free. Better's, you know, probably you're an existing app, you're doing a little bit of work, probably to do something like support gestures, but you're not going all the way to a touch-optimized experience, which would be a best kind of experience. Things in the better bucket, you know, things like IE, they have support for zooming and panning, but you know, they don't really need, you know, it's not like you could have multiple web pages up or something and interact with them all at the same time and sort of throw them off into space and they spiral out or anything like that.
You
know, maybe that makes sense, you know, in, you know, your photo app or something else, you know, some sort of data visualization application. But yeah, a lot of the applications that are in Box are what we would consider sort of better experiences, and they do a lot of work around gestures and having a really great gesture experience. XPS Viewer is a good example. They support panning and zoom, but they've gone a little beyond just, you know, zooming in and out on the text. When you zoom out far enough, the pages start to tile. I can show this as a quick demo. And then there are nice things you can do here. For example, if you knew that you had written some document and 30 pages in there was this chart you wanted to show somebody, it's very easy to zoom out on the text, see all 30 pages, you know, double-click on the page you want to and jump right to that page and so show them the chart. Whereas, you know, in a traditional app, you sort of have to, you know, go through the scroll bar, or if you know the exact page, you could jump to it, but, you know, I don't even remember the exact page that something like that's on. So that sort of support's very nice. Talking about the better bucket again briefly, it's mostly about supporting gestures, or if you have existing behaviors for the mouse that need to be tweaked slightly for touch, you know, doing something along those lines.
So what are the gestures we are supporting? Just, you know, a short list.
The short list of multi-touch gestures, building on things like flicks that came in Vista and the existing support for sort of mouse interactions like taps and double taps and, you know, different ways of getting right-click. That was all introduced in sort of the XP time frame. For Win 7, we have things like two-finger pan. I can show these. We also have single-finger panning, which is a really great feature. It tries to determine whether or not your finger should be acting like a mouse or whether it should be panning. And we do things like look for, you know, is the person interacting with a scrollable area? If so, we try and pan the content. Otherwise, it behaves like a mouse. The two-finger zoom, pinch, stretch, sort of canonical. Everybody's familiar with that. Rotate as well. And then we have things like a two-finger tap. This doesn't actually do anything by default in the OS, but an application can take advantage of it. And lots of applications use it to do things like restore the view to 100%. So if you were an IE and you zoomed, you know, in a little bit for readability, or maybe you wanted to, you know, zoom in on a photo or something like that, you can two-finger tap and it zooms back to 100%. And then the final gesture is we have something called press and tap. And we should demo this because it's kind of hard to describe in words. But the basic idea is you put one finger on something you want to right click on and then tap with another finger anywhere near it. And you get a right click. This is in a lot of ways morally equivalent to the barrel button on the tablet pens. You know, the pen support has always supported two ways of getting a right click. There's the press and hold where you hold the pen for a while. And then after a certain timeout, it generates a right click. Mm-hmm. But for power users or people who prefer a quicker gesture, you can hold the barrel button and tap, and you get a right click that way. In a lot of ways, it's like that. It's a fast way of getting a right click.
Cool.
Sarid, you mentioned that actually we need to see some demos in order to understand, right? So you talked about gesture, you talked about good and better. So let's see some examples.
Yeah. So let's start with legacy support. So this is the 2007 version of Office. We've just got a sample Word document here. And this is an example of the legacy support and what you can expect in your application. We can see that we can do things like panning, both one finger and two finger. We also can zoom in and out on the content. We were talking before about single finger panning and how sometimes it functions like a mouse and sometimes it functions like panning. You can see here that when I'm dragging up and down, the user very likely wants to pan. But if I'm in a panable area and I do want text selection or drag and drop or something else that you normally do with the mouse, you can start horizontally and, you know, do a selection like this.
So how do you know?
So we look at the angles that the gesture is occurring at. If it's, you know, mostly vertical and it's in a panable area, then it's very likely panning. In most of the other cases, it's mouse injection. So in this case, it is a panable area, but they were going strictly horizontal. We know that they can't pan horizontally, and so it becomes mouse messages for the application.
And you translate it, basically. You're injecting the mouse messages.
Yeah, there's under the covers, there's sort of this hierarchy of things. Like if we know that the application doesn't support gestures or raw touch data, then we fall back to mouse. And the sort of a promotion model of, you know, do they support gestures? Okay, great. If they don't and it comes back to us as unhandled, then we, you know, trigger things like our legacy behavior. Like we'll inject control scroll wheels if it's zoom and that sort of thing.
Cool. So this is the good behavior.
Yeah, this is good. This is what Windows 7 provides for you by default. This is the old version of Office. This is touch unaware. They haven't done any work whatsoever. These are the things that you get for free just with Windows 7. Now, if we want to talk about the better bucket, we have some examples as well. Here is the Inbox Photo Viewer, and they've done work to hook up things like panning, zooming, rotation, and so forth. So if, you know, I want to zoom in on these cats, it's very easy. One of the nice differences about using the gesture APIs as opposed to relying on the sort of legacy support that the OS provides for default or for legacy touch and aware applications are things like we can tell the application where the gesture is occurring. So if I want to zoom in, you know, on this red fence in the background, the zoom is focused around there. You don't have that with control scroll wheel. There's no notion of the point that the control scroll wheel is being generated around. So that's one of the benefits of using the gesture APIs. You get things like the center of the gesture and a bunch of other gesture-specific arguments that don't come through in the sort of legacy support for these things. So Photo Viewer also supports things like rotate. And Vista introduced gestures like flicks, and we can flick forward and back through our photos and see various things like this. So this is a nice photo experience. Another example, comparing the Inbox XPS viewer for XPS documents that's in Windows 7 to Word, you can see that they've got panning as well. Things like text selection work. But they've also done a lot of work around zoom. So if we zoom out on the text, if I had a long document and I was looking for a chart or a diagram or something, one of the neat things you can do is sort of zoom out on things, and maybe there were 30 pages here all tiled. I can, you know, double click on the one I want and jump directly to that. And that's a nice way to navigate your document. We think this is something that'll be sort of habit forming for users over time. Yep. Zoom out, you know, pan through a bunch of content, go to exactly where they want. So those are some brief examples of gesture support in the OS.
So that's cool. So this is the out-of-the-box experience. What else did we do out of the box as far as the user experience?
Yeah. Explorer supports a lot of things. You can zoom and explore. If you have a collection of photos, for example, you can make them larger. If we go to a large directory like System32, you can see we support panning in here. One of the nice things we've done with panning, you probably noticed the window bounce, is we saw in usability studies that a lot of people were confused that panning is really about moving the content, right? You can see that the content follows my fingers' movements. It's the opposite of the scroll bar. The scroll bar actually goes the opposite way of the content. And so for some users, when we ask them to do something like pan down, they would immediately drag down. So we added this boundary feedback that shows you you've reached the end of content and the window sort of bounces and resists. So that lets the users know, you know, if they're just starting with panning, hey, you know, you need to drag the other way.
Right.
You've reached the end of content.
So what you're saying is that we have used the mouse for so long, we already programmed. So
yes.
Someone actually allow you to drag
it
down.
On the plus side, it does not take long to learn that you need to pan the other way. And
yeah.
That, you know, the content follows your fingers is a very easy thing to remember.
Right, and basically what you're saying that, I mean, there is no gesture or anything that we do interaction with touching something that is left unmapped or unknown. So if you do something like drag and reach to all the way to the end, and you try to do drag more, so we notify you.
We never leave you in a state where it feels like it didn't work, and you're just sort of asking, you know, hey, I panned, but the OS didn't do anything in response to that. Here we show you, you know, the window bounces. You know, you get some feedback that we saw that you took an action and we responded to it, but you just happen to be trying to ask us to scroll up, and you know, there's nowhere left to go.
That's really nice. So what else did we do within the OS?
Okay, yeah, so this is a good question. We did a lot of work beyond just gestures. Multi-touch is more than, and touch in general is more than just gesture support. There are some very subtle things we should talk about. For example, if I'm using jump lists, I can drag these out from the taskbar. If I move slowly here, you can see the spacing between these items is larger than if I invoke the same jump list with
the mouse.
One of the reasons we did this is we didn't, on one hand, we didn't want to create a sort of Duplo version of Windows, right? You didn't want to look at a machine and say, oh, you know, that's a touch machine that's got this giant UI and so forth. But some of this UI is transient, like menus, right? They come and go. They're not up all the time. And there are very real usability improvements we can make by making the spacing between the items larger. You can see here with mouse, some of these would be very hard to target, right? But if I bring the same thing up with touch, I have much more space here. It's much closer to the size of my finger. That's a much better experience. But this UI isn't here all the time, right? You invoke the menu, you tap on something, you go. And so that's a place where we can make the UI a little bigger if it helps, and we don't lose that feel of Windows being Windows. There are other places that we've done some work. For example, with the mouse, you see close boxes and so forth when I hover over them, over
the
these applications.
X.
Yeah, the red X's in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm using touch and tap on them, one, the close boxes are always there because there's no way to hover with touch, and two, they're a little larger. That's a good example of subtle places where we've made very small changes to improve the usability for touch, but it still feels like Windows. It doesn't look like a Duplo version of the OS. It retains the sort of look and feel. There's other subtle things like the Show Desktop button there. When you use it with touch, it functions slightly differently than when you use it with the mouse. The mouse, you know, when I hover over this corner, I get the peak effect. But with touch, you press and hold in the corner, and you get that same effect. And then, you know, both with the mouse and with your finger, you can tap to, you know, show and hide the desktop. So there's lots of subtle things like that that we've done to make the touch experience better. And they go beyond just gestures. It's sort of polish in places. There are other things like if we pull up Paint here, Paint is something that starts to hint at what we call the best bucket, you know, experiences that are optimized for touch, things that were built for the ground up with touch in mind. With the brushes here in Paint, the new brushes all support multi-touch, and I can do things like ink with one finger, I can also ink with another. Now the nice thing about this is, and the nice thing about the platform that this is built on top of, is it supports however many fingers you have. So this device can support, right now, the beta version of the drivers can support about 4 fingers. You can say I can ink with 4 fingers there, but if I had a device that supported 100 fingers, you know, you and my, me and our 8 best friends can all sit here and get our fingers on. If we had a larger screen, it would make more sense. But the point is, the platform supports however many contacts the hardware does. And these are the sorts of things that you couldn't do with a trackpad. You know, you need something that supports more than 2 fingers for that sort of thing. So the Paint experience is really neat.
And just to make sure, so the API do support like querying how many touch points I can actually get. And that's a hardware constraint.
Yes, yeah. It's something that's a function of the underlying hardware used here. Some hardware supports 2 fingers, some supports 10, you know, ranges in between. Some will support more down the road. But yeah, it's absolutely a function of the hardware. The OS, most of our features are designed for use with 2 fingers, like the gestures and so forth, but the platform allows you to build things that use any number of features, or sorry, fingers. you can build any number of features as well if you'd like.
Using all the fingers.
Yeah, so the platform's not constrained. If you had a device that supports 100 fingers, then you could use all of them through the platform. And you can write an application that finds out, you know, how much the hardware supports. You know, is it a 2-finger device? And maybe you're a game and you turn off your multiplayer mode because it takes 2 hands to move the paddles for one person. And if you only support 2 fingers, well, then you can only play single player or something like that. Yeah. That's a good example of where you might change your UI based on what the hardware supports.
So that's already taking us to the best experience. But just before that, so you we've seen the desktop in the taskbar in action, right? So we can see the subtle changes in the UI. But the taskbar doesn't really use the Touch API, right?
No. The taskbar is one of the things that's available to people who are, you know, working in the best bucket is, you know, I've got a control, I've written it, it already responds to mouse messages, and I only want to do a little bit for touch. You know, I want to, you know, adjust the spacing on my menu, or I want to use a different color for an icon or something like that. An easy way to do that is continue to respond to mouse messages, and then using getMessageExtraInfo, you can inspect the messages and see whether they came from touch or from pen or from mouse or some other input source, and then do input-specific handling for them. So both the Show Desktop button, the jump lists, this is how these are implemented under the covers, is they're just getting mouse messages, they see what the origin input device for the mouse message was, and then they do something slightly different. So if it was touch, you know, they use slightly bigger menu spacing when they draw the menu. But it's a very simple change to make. It works very well for existing apps. You don't have to, you know, to respond to some new messages or use a new API or anything like that. It works very well for the scenario of sort of grafting touch support into an existing app.
Right, so you can add, you do need to change your code, obviously, but if you want to have different functionality, it makes sense. But it's very, very subtle, very, you know, very little change to whatever existing code base that you have. And can basically can make significantly changes to the user experience.
Yeah.
Excellent. So these are the we talked about the good, about better experience, and we've seen Paint, which is towards the best experience. Mm-hmm. So what is the best experience?
So the best experience is really something that's designed from the ground up for touch. It's something that's a touch optimized experience. It's it doesn't have to be your entire application. You know, it could be a specific mode within your application is designed for touch. You know, if I'm somebody like PowerPoint, for example, building the whole app and making everything touch optimized doesn't make sense, right? You're not going to do everything in PowerPoint with touch.
Right.
But there might be some things you do, like the slide sorter view. That's kind of boring today. But you could imagine a sort of touch optimized version where it shows all the slides and you can just sort of drag them around and rearrange them. And, you know, it starts looking like something out of a movie. But that's something that you could build with the platform. And that would be what we would call one of these best experiences. It's something that's really built for touch. And goes beyond, you know, what you can easily do with a mouse. You know, the fact that you could move multiple slides at a time, or maybe we're collaborating and I'm working on one part of the deck and you're working on another part of the deck, or that sort of thing. Those are things that, you know, using the APIs that make up the best bucket enable you to do.
Sure. So these are customized experiences for using multi-touch.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So you talked about the best experience. Why don't you show us the best experience?
Excellent. Let's do that. We have a quick sample here that one of our PM interns put together for us. This is an example of something that we would say is in the best bucket. You can do things like interact with multiple objects. I can resize something. Yohai, you want to reach around and grab one of these and move it and translate it and so forth. We can both resize and rotate and toss our objects. Oh, I think you've made yours a little too small there.
I can move that other one.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So this obviously is a very simple example, but you could imagine that these were photos and you're playing with photos, or maybe it's a map and you're zooming in and out on the city or something like that, or maybe it's some sort of data visualization and this is the set of all documents about Abraham Lincoln and you can zoom in on and see specific documents and things like that, search results, all sorts of things could be presented in this way. So how did we build this? What's under the covers? The sample is relatively simple, and it's easy to sort of take these things apart. And it's really, there's a source of raw data, which in this case is WMTouch. We're getting all the raw data off the digitizer that's telling us about the fingers and so forth. That goes into our manipulations API, which gives you 2D affine transforms. It's the one that lets me, rotate and resize and translate this object all at the same time. And then there's after the manipulation is ended, when my finger comes off, we've got this sort of inertia API. And that's the one that's, doing deceleration. It has the elastic borders at the edge, the boundaries, that sort of thing. And all of these things are sort of pluggable. Like, you could use a different input source to manipulations if you wanted. You could build your own physics engine, if the guys who build something like Havok want to build this really incredibly complicated physics model, sure, plug it in. The pipeline is intended to be extensible and easy to work with. So
just to better understand, there are different technologies, there are different APIs that we are using here, right? This is all the same technology, there are different APIs. So you get all the raw data all the fingers that I'm touching, all the touch points with WMTouch, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you said something about manipulation. So off the bat, it's very easy to see that with manipulation, you can do so like resize and rotate at the same time, which you couldn't do with just basic gestures, right?
Yeah.
Gestures support one gesture at a time. So either you zoom in as rod or you rotate. You cannot use them both. So the manipulation is what?
So manipulations gives you, for the set of contacts on a manipulation processor, which could be however many you could get on there, a 2D affine transform that corresponds to the change in behavior of these things over time. So if I'm rotating, resizing, and translating, you get a transform matrix, basically, that tells you about these things. And you can apply it to your object and resize it or do whatever else the user is doing in response to that input. As you pointed out, it is a superset of what you can do with gestures. Gestures are really a simplified version of the full set of manipulations you can do. And it's intended for existing apps, right? In something like Word, you can't rotate and zoom at the same time. Word doesn't support rotate. It doesn't make any sense. So there are some restrictions there that were sort of intentionally put there to keep the API simple and user-friendly. And it's very scoped for what it does, which is sort of, simple gesture support for existing apps. You can't do multiple gestures. Like, I can't be panning in one corner and, rotating something else. There's only one gesture going on at a time. And there are some restrictions, like you noted, about rotate not combining with other gestures and things like that. But if you do want the sort of full set of transforms, if you want to be able to grab something like this with however many fingers and rotate, resize it, whatever, you can use the manipulations API.
And then you mentioned there is another API that we can use, which is the inertia, which allows you to have that effect of bouncing from the roll and accelerating and decelerating. That's a difference.
So inertia is a relatively simple physics model. The basic idea here is you set up some initial state, and you can get all of this from the manipulation processor. When your last finger comes off the object and we know you're done interacting with it, you can do things like get the velocity that it was moving at, how fast it was rotating, its angular velocity, things like that, and then feed all of those into the inertia API's initial state. I'm going in this direction at this speed, and I was rotating, and blah, 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 and I was expanding over time. And then you specify how you want inertia to work. Do you want it to decelerate using a particular curve, or do you want it to go exactly 100 pixels and stop, and we'll sort of reverse calculate the curve for you to land right there and make it look natural? There's different ways of using it. You specify how you want to use it. And then you set up some other things when you're setting up your initial state, like are there borders, you know? Do I have a hard stop at this border, or are there elastic margins that they bounce off of? You build all those things up, and then once you've got your initial state set up, you've specified how you want inertia to work, you use a timer or something and call back into it, and we will give you, on the same event interface that inertia, or sorry, that manipulations uses, we'll give you callbacks that tell you, hey, you're in this new position, that sort of thing. So if you're already handling the sort of notifications you get from the manipulation processors about changes that the user is doing, it's very easy to plug inertia into that. It's effectively sort of a ghost user that's moving your thing perfectly along some deceleration curve. So that's the idea behind inertia.
Cool. So just to try to summarize, so we have the pipeline, which is actually grabbing the WM touch. Mm-hmm. Then we have manipulation as we are changing the objects on touching, and then when we get our finger off, then we can use inertia to.
Mm-hmm. We should talk a little bit about WM touch too. One of the very few changes we made in the platform between beta and RC is we unified the WM touch messages into one. There were originally three: WM touch down, WM touch move, and WM touch up. And we found that developers, based on feedback at PDC and from people using the API since then, that distinction wasn't very useful for them. And a lot of people ended up in their window message handler just handling all three of them the same. They just all fell through to the same handler, and they, you know, unpacked the message, walked through the list of contacts, and did whatever they needed to do with them. In light of that feedback, for RC, we unified all of these into one message. So there's now just one WM touch message, and you get an array of touch input structs that have information like the X and Y coordinate of each finger, the contact ID for them, and other information. So that's the change from beta to RC for WM touch. One other interesting thing to note here is you don't have to use WM touch. If you have some custom hardware and you have a different way of getting raw data off the device, you can feed any set of raw data into the manipulations API. You could use one of the tablet controls, like real-time stylus or something like that, and you can get raw data from that as well. So if you're an inking app and you're using the tablet stuff, there's, in Windows 7, easy ways to turn on multi-touch support in all the existing controls, and then you could use those to feed manipulations if you wanted on top of that. So
that's provide a very good experience to existing apps as well as new apps mm-hmm. who are using Ink. Mm-hmm. Very nice. So this was very insightful, and I mean, I'm very excited about multi-touch.
Good, we're very excited too.
So yes, I'm playing with it a little bit. I'm putting some example. It's very nice and cool platform. We haven't seen a lot of code mm-hmm. in this session, but no worries. We'll have some additional sessions covering the API in depth, going through all the different features and API that we've just covered. So with that, Reid, thank you very much for
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and see you soon.